is Taz.
The mood is about to change.
The Human Podcast Machine.
You're not afraid of a little competition, are you?
Hey, all right, boys and girls, here we go. Welcome to the Fantasy Draft Edition of HPM, the Human Podcast Machine. My name is Taz, and we're going to cover top managers, top 10 all-time managers, Fantasy Draft Edition. If you're not familiar with the way this works, it's all opinionated. It's just opinions. It's myself, my producer Seth, and the one and only Professor Fagus himself, Mike Tenay, the professor. Hello, Mike. How are you, bro?
Oh, just great. It's like 4 a.m. here in Las Vegas. If you still haven't figured out this time difference thing, Taz, you're killing me, would you? What's going
listen,
on?
Listen, dude. Look, man, don't you realize that you people live in the West Coast, the Mecca of the United States is the Northeast. Have you not figured that out?
You see how much we care in Las Vegas. You know, in Vegas at the casinos, no clocks. Did you ever notice that? There's a matter of fact, let Professor Vegas drop a little knowledge on you here. Only one place that you have clocks in Vegas, in
where?
The casinos.
Where?
In the race and sports books, because people need to know when the games are starting and when the races are going. Outside of that, the rest of the casino, no clocks, because they don't want you to know what time it is. So you might miss an appointment, stick around, and drop an extra couple hundred.
Bro, you're like Big Ben. You know, I got to tell you, there could be another reason why there could be no clocks over there, so everybody's broke and drunk.
Present company included.
All right, look, let's do top managers. So here we go.
Wait a minute.
Do you have any grievances?
Hold on. I got to get something off my chest.
Do you have a grievance?
I'm a little bit hot. Matter of fact, you know what? I am DMV line hot.
You know what I mean?
DMV
I know what
line
means.
Hot?
Yep.
Would you listen to this? I sent your producer, Seth, a text recently. Congratulations on the success of the Human Podcast Machine. People really seem to like the fantasy episodes, right?
It's called Fantasy Draft Edition, Mike.
Fantasy Draft Edition. Right. Yeah, fill in the blanks. you sit back, you expect a reply like, oh, appreciate your involvement, the fantasy shows, can't wait to do future shows, right? You know what I get instead?
Nothing.
Really happy with my picks.
Oh my God! You agenda.
let me get this off my chest.
Typical
like
agenda.
Said, DMV line hot, bro.
Yeah, DMV hot.
He then proceeds to run down stats for me. He says, "You know, since I picked him, Dolph Ziggler's the Intercontinental Champ."
Oh my
I said,
God!
Huh? He said Cesaro's on a 4-match winning streak.
Seth, did you really do this?
I love what they're doing with my man Miz. He said everything except the Usos are hitting .333 with runners in scoring position.
Hey, don't forget about Rusev, my main man.
I knew it. I thought Miz was your main man. This guy acts like somehow he's influenced Vince McMahon's booking.
I think I have.
Oh yeah. Okay.
Maybe he just thinks that he's winning money like this is some high stakes fantasy football.
Or maybe he's just a friggin' idiot. How about that part?
I'm not going to disagree with.
Seth, why would you not say a thank you, Mike? You're a big part of it. Of course, Taz is the reason why this motorboat rolls the way it does. Why would you not do that type of thing and put me over more than anyone?
I don't know. You guys are the baby faces. You need a heel here, right?
All
right.
Really happy with my picks. then there's only one other topic. Other day on Twitter, I make a casual mention. Looking forward to our podcast. We're going to pick the managers. You know what he tweets back?
What?
Do your homework! !!
To you.
To me!
Are you kidding? Seth!
Now, let me ask you one thing, Seth. ECW days, right?
Yeah.
Did you ever have Amish Roadkill come up to you in catering and say, you know, I think, Taz, you need to work on your suplexes a little bit?
No. We know why we didn't have catering, but I hear you.
Did you ever have Donnie Allen barge into your locker room and say, think you need to get a little snugger on those submissions? You might want to do your... I'm DMV line hot, bro.
I hear you. Donnie Allen, by the way. PW Pro Wrestling Illustrated number 500. Remember that? That
was a
big gimmick.
Put that on the resume.
Seth, I mean, how could you handle not just our special guest on these editions of Fantasy Draft, Mike Tenay, but he's a personal friend of mine, and he's a professor. I mean, well, not really, but he's like a genius in the business. But now, once you get to know Mike, he's the furthest thing from any kind of professor. So,
do your homework! !!
Do you want to apologize now or later?
I don't want to apologize. I wanted him to be prepared. I want the show
God.
To be the best.
Oh my God!
I love Professor Vegas. It was out of love.
Oh
come on.
God.
I love you, Professor.
You're on your own, kid.
Hot. On your own. DMV line hot. Just remember that.
DMV, Department of Motor Vehicles.
Here we go. Let's go to the managers.
Oh, you ready, Mike?
You know, I'd like to kick the managers off if I could, because I kind of have a wild
first
card.
First of all, listen, Mike, I got a problem with you now, okay? So being that we're all airing grievances here, this is like a Seinfeld episode. You know,
I'm never going to get to the managers.
Yeah, no, because... You try to take over my show. You're like, ah, let's get to the managers now. No, Mike, no. No. No, we're going to get to the managers when I want to get to.
I have a wild card at number 10 I wanted to spring on you.
All right, go ahead, go. Let's get to the managers. Top 10 managers.
Can we go managers now?
The order.
We're going to go 10 down to 1,
please,
Seth, by the way.
Hold on. Mike, I know.
I said that for Seth.
I know you did. Oh, my God. All right, Mike, we're going to go like this. The typical order. It's going to be Tanae first,
yeah.
Seth. Second, I got confused what number came after one.
Seth's, you're in the cleanup spot at 3. I got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I'm free.
Right?
Yeah. Now, and the thing, for those out there, fans or anybody listen, when you're going to tweet at any of us and rip us for these picks or the order of them, again, as I said, this is all organic. I don't know Seth's list. I don't know today's list. These dudes don't know my list, and we might miss some, we might not. I don't know. This is all opinionated. This is not written in stone anywhere. It's not the 11th commandment. Trust me.
Now, top 10 wrestling managers.
So when I'm looking at the managers,
yeah.
I say to myself, I think I'm probably going to have all men's managers.
Okay, well, I'm glad you said that. Hold on.
Can I not finish a sentence? You put me in the starting gate. You put me in the number one
spot. Because you're going to take credit for my idea.
I can't even get out of the starting gate.
No, because this is getting edited, okay? Because I forgot to mention...
Yeah, well,
right.
Wait a minute. You forgot to mention, what, do we have rules now all of a sudden?
Yes, because there's a little bit of a caveat here. In these top managers, this is not females.
What?
No, it's not.
What,
this
are you,
is
Jack Tunney all of a sudden changes the rules after the fact? Come on. You're killing
Jack
me.
Tunney. This female managers will be handled when we do...
Wait a minute. Female managers will be handled. I can't talk about that. Call the hotline.
I'm going to HR right now.
That'll be handled when
you're killing my number 10 pick.
The whole
idea behind this pick was, I think if there was one female manager / valet...
You have to say the name, right? You have to say it.
That could break through, it would be Sherry Martel. And I think Sherry Martel would be so complimented with the fact that because of her ability to get involved in the matches to a different level than the other valets, that she's the one that breaks through and should be on this list.
Okay, I know that, Mike. And I don't disagree, but let me finish, because you're going to get banned from this whole show. I'm just letting you know.
I hope so.
No, that's...
if I get banned, my pay gets doubled.
He's like, I hope
so. Zero.
No, because Seth, I'm sorry to say this, Mike, Seth is one step ahead of you, because he texted me last night before you text me, and he was talking about Sherry Martel, the great Sherry Martel. And I said, no, we're going to do all males, not females. And he bitched about it, too. I'm like, look, this is my show. Where's the confusion?
The whole idea behind this is there's no rules, no guidelines. And now all of a sudden, you're throwing this at
me. There are rules. No, the rules are, this is top managers, all males. Female managers will be handled when we go over our list down the road of valets. It's a very simple thing. Because there's a fine line between a valet and a female manager.
Oh, you're not kidding. And that's where I think Sherry Martel's the one that just busts through at number 10. But, okay, so you're going to make me change my pick now at 10?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm gonna take my person that just was outside the top 10 list. You throw me a curveball here.
Well, you're going to have your honorable mention, because I have an honorable mention. Seth, you have honorable mention, too.
Yes,
right? We'll do that at the end of this. Can we please get rolling? We got 5 minutes for this whole show.
Number 10 I'm going to put in then as Gary Hart. Very, very interesting manager. Sort of started off as a Bobby Heenan copy. Playboy Gary Hart. Really evolved with that character once he had the ability to be involved, I think, with the booking. Some in Florida with Dusty and Texas as well, with World Class. So I'm going to put Gary Hart in the number 10 slot, but with an asterisk and a caveat that I wanted to have Sherry Martel in there, but we'll address that at another time.
Constant cried. Yeah, well, Gary Hart, big respect. I mean, he was kind of a weird kind of guy, bald-headed guy with a mustache. You know, it made his fame in Texas for the most part, right, Mike, and World Class. And
I have him on my honorable mention list, but Gary Hart, Seth, you probably have no idea. Gary Hart, well, I don't believe he was in the WWE ever, so you probably don't know him, Seth.
guess what, podcast machine? He's on my list.
Wow. Whoa. Wow.
Back up.
Yeah, you know, hey, here's the I'll get into that later. All right, so, Seth, what's your number 10 top 10 managers?
Top 10 managers, number 10, I am going with Precious Paul Ellering.
Wow. Okay.
It's amazing that, you know, he fit in with the Road Warriors, and he was a mouthpiece, even though they didn't need a mouthpiece necessarily, but he filled that role, and he did it so well, and he just fits so well with those guys, well, and he was with them for a very long time.
I agree, and we'll get into Paul Ellering. He's on my list also. I'm assuming he's on today's list also. I don't think you're doing him a good service at 10, in my opinion, okay? So I don't like your pick at 10 there.
That's fine.
He deserves to be higher. All right, so here's my... You like that, Mike? I'm telling the guy what to pick.
Did we have your number 10 yet?
Wait, I just changed. My Ellering is now number 7.
How about the one list we did, and I forgot to give a number 2?
Yes.
I did, Mike. I forgot to give a number 2.
And I got heat for it.
You should. You're the producer.
I am the producer, but I know Taz can't.
I know producer. You got one big button. You hit it, bam, boom. That's it.
All right, look.
I've seen producers in the past. Feet go up at that point. Yeah,
yeah, right, you got to put the heat on them.
I didn't know he couldn't count to 10 anymore from those chair shots.
I can't. I'm lucky I can count to 5. All right, here's my number 10. Skandar Akbar is my number 10. I think he was very underrated. Another guy who had big fame for many years in world class in Texas. I think, you know, he created a lot of... Here's the thing, guys. I mean, you know, the key, and you know this, Mike. I mean, I don't know, Seth might know this. The key with a manager is... Sometimes he's the mouthpiece of the talent if the talent's not a good talker, but sometimes he's just a heat magnet to get heat on a guy that can't get heat. And I think a guy like Akbar was very good at that. He got instant heat, what the Arab gimmick and all. I was a fan of his heat abilities.
Interesting. I do not have Skandar Akbar on my top 10, but like you said, very interesting person and very influential for many years in Texas.
All right. Yeah, I'm surprised you don't have him on your list, Mike. I'm actually a little disappointed in you also, Mike. So,
look, this list is subjective. You just gave a 10-minute intro about people and not chopping down other people because of their list, and then the first thing, right out of the box, boom, you're on me.
We're off to a great start here.
We're rolling. We're not even at 9 yet. We got heat everywhere. All right, so number 9 for Tanae. Go!
I'm going to go with Captain Lou at number 9.
Wow.
You know, when I think of Lou Albano, you think of just totally the difference in the WWF as opposed to WWE of today. Vince McMahon Sr. relied so heavily on the managers in that era. He had his unholy trinity, and I think we'll hit probably everybody involved in that group of three managers.
Yep.
at some point here. But it was so different from the mindset of today and the mindset of a Vince McMahon in terms of how they use the managers. WWE went for years really without having much in the way of managers, and of course we've seen the resurgence with the Paul Heyman role, even to the point where Paul Heyman these days is an advocate as opposed to being a manager. That's how much things have changed. But anyway, Captain Lou, amazing body of work. I put him at number 9.
Yeah, well, they can't. I mean, Lou Albano was one of the greatest of all time. Actually was a very good worker back in the day, I believe. Correct, Mike?
The Sicilians tag team
there
with Lou Albano and Tony Altomare.
Yes, I worked for Savoldi and Altomare back in the day, and I'm still waiting on those checks, but I digress. All right, so go ahead, Seth. Who's your number 9?
My number 9, you guys probably have him a little higher on your list, so I'm sure I'm getting in trouble for it. James J. Dillon. Who led the Four Horsemen. I mean, the Four Horsemen is the most popular, biggest faction in the history of wrestling, in my opinion. And he, as a young guy, as a young kid in my, 12, whatever years old, I was a believer. And, and he seemed like he was the businessman. Like, he was the mind behind the Four Horsemen. I bought in completely to that.
And you know what? I have JJ on. He was great, no doubt. And I have him actually, believe it or not, on my honorable mention. I don't even have him on my top 10. But I will tell you this. What JJ did, so impressive, is he was with the Four Horsemen. That was his big fame, obviously. And he was with a bunch of cats that could talk. And, he still had that, one of the best talkers ever, and Ric Flair or Arn Anderson, and Tully was a good promo. I mean, just saying, and he still was a powerful presence as a pro wrestling manager with guys that could talk. That was impressive.
Boy, I tell you what, you just took all my steam at number 8 pick.
Well, there you go.
Sure, because that's my entire rap for JJ at number 8, but you finish off number 9 first, Taz.
Okay, number 9 for me is Precious Paul Ellering. So...
all the way to number 9. I screwed up with number 10 at Precious Paul, and he has him at 9. Jeez. Oh, sorry. You know, I need to go back and watch some old footage.
It should all of a sudden be a top 3 for you, Cass.
Right.
No, listen. Anything outside the top 3 maybe over expanding your boundaries.
Oh, jeez. I actually...
New York City school system, line 2.
Here's the thing. I had Paul Ellering. I was a big fan of his. I was a big fan of Road Warriors. But I had Paul Ellering actually higher. And then I moved him to 9. I have my reasons I'll get into later. But, you know, I got to say something about Paul Ellering. I was really... When he went to the WWF with the Road Warriors, they obviously... They booked the Road Warriors different than they were booked for so many years. But when he had that friggin' puppet or whatever it was on his arm. Remember that, Mike?
Oh, boy, do I ever.
I mean, how do you take Paul Ellering, who just had this vernacular, his inflection, the way he spoke, he was friggin' great.
With the Wall Street Journal rolled
out. Yeah.
That's right.
Let's give him I don't want to curse. Let's give him a puppet on his arm like he's friggin' a ventriloquist. What a rip.
You know, we'll do a Terry Fader.
What's that?
I said all of a sudden he's Terry Fader. America's Got Talent.
But that's how they were back then.
15 years ago.
Yeah, let's give Dusty Rhodes black and white polka dots. Let's rip the guys that were star. I mean, that's what it was. It was kind of goofy back then, you know? It's different now, but yeah, it was inside rips, as you know, today.
Well, especially because it was not someone who was homegrown. If you weren't homegrown from their organization, almost called it a territory, which it wasn't back in the day, right. From their organization, it almost seemed like you were going to pay the price. Didn't
well, I wouldn't know anything about that. But
yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so let's go on to number 8 so I can be a nice man here. Are you done
number
today?
Eight.
You ready for number 8? Come on.
You took all my steam away with J.J., but what you said about J.J. Dillon is exactly what I was thinking. Here you have this amazing group of talkers. You have Ric Flair, arguably the best talker in the business. You can make that argument. You've got Arn Anderson right there with him.
Yep.
Tully sitting right there to drive the point home. Yet J.J.'s persona was so strong. He had the perfect look for the Four Horsemen and then also had that heat involvement at ringside. You knew that shoe was going to come into play at some
forgot
point in the match.
Yeah.
Just loved what J.J. Dillon added to an already incredibly credible group. But that's number 8, J.J. Dillon.
All right. Well, that's, yep. Well, there you go. I mean, again, I have him on honorable mention. You guys both have him on the top 10. I wonder if I did J.J. a disservice.
Well, we'll find out. Let's see who else you have.
Well, let's see who else Seth has at number 8 here. What do you got?
I got the captain, Captain Lou Albano, at number 8. And, you know, as a younger guy, you know, he came out with the Samoans. He was a larger-than-life character. He had rubber bands in his his cheeks. I mean, he was a big cartoon character, and he talked all his verbal diarrhea.
Think of the involvement in the Cyndi Lauper videos, too, in terms of mainstream appeal for Captain Lou.
Right. Here's my thing. Okay. My number 8 is also Lou Albano, so I'm scared that I picked the same thing that Seth did.
Uh-oh.
But I want to say this about Lou Albano to both you guys, anybody that was nice enough to download or subscribe and listen to this edition of Fantasy Draft Edition. Here's my thing with Lou Albano. I've done my respect for the guy and what he's done as a wrestler and then segueing to his massive success as a manager. But this was my thing with him. I felt it was too much of him. Now, I feel like there's a fine line. Now, I'm speaking as a wrestler here, okay? There's a fine line when a manager can steal that spotlight from you. And that's what I think, and I don't think he meant to do it, but that's what I think Captain Lou Albano did. He was such a larger-than-life character that he sometimes outshined his wrestlers.
Love that analysis, and that's one of the reasons I think that we have him down towards the lower part of the top 10. I really do.
I think you're just jealous because you didn't think of saying what I just said, Mike.
What the hell?
But you know what? You know what, though? You have to take into account that he was managing teams like the Moondogs and the Samoans who didn't talk at all. So,
hey, listen, don't let the facts get in the way of a good story, Seth. All right, so. That's a good point, actually.
Pardon me.
I didn't think of that part. He really was a larger than life, character. Okay, we got 30 seconds left in the whole show. So, no, I'm joking. It's a joke.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Draft Edition of the Human Podcast Machine.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And now, back to the Fantasy Draft with Taz.
All right, so number seven. All right, do you have a number seven today? You're going to cry about the girls.
I have a number seven. Do your homework, exclamation point. Number seven, I have Paul Bear at number seven. Main reason being that I think he added so much to the persona and the character development in the early stages of the Undertaker's run. And I think he was so instrumental in getting that character pushed off at the outset and eventually, you know, just taking that character to the level that it is today. So I put Paul Bearer at number seven.
What do you got, Seth?
I was just surprised. Well, I'll get back to it with Paul Bearer. But at number seven, I have Gary Hart, who Tanae mentioned earlier. And the thing that stuck out with me with Gary Hart, I remember him managing the Great Kabuki, and he really was serious, and he was scary.
He was scary.
He had a dark, sinister look.
Yeah.
And very believable. And you know, I've learned a little bit more about him in recent years, and he wrote a book before he died, and I heard the book is really good. It's very hard to find. So if anybody has a book out there.
I got to tell you, Seth, I'm very impressed because Mike, I give behind the scenes, I give Seth a hard time about that he's just basically a WWE fan and knows nothing else. I assume that his total fandom was via, WWE and Google. Like, you know, so he just knows from Google, but he actually seems like he knows, or he's bullshitting, one or the other. I don't know.
Well, I think what's happening here is because of the involvement of you and I in these fantasy podcasts, he's sort of thinking outside the box. So I think what's happening here is we're rubbing off on him.
That's the way I would look at it. That right there, folks, was the real Mike Tanay.
All play-by-play guys are baby faces.
That was Mike Tanay. That's all I want to say.
For the record, I read every wrestling magazine for 10-plus years. I watched every wrestling I could find, Southwest Championship, World Class, Florida Championship on the Spanish Channel. Give me a break.
Well, look, when we do a podcast about Seth, then we'll get into that.
then you get the big ratings.
By the way, we won't hold our breath for that one.
that's not coming anytime soon.
Well, Gary Hart was a very believable, scary guy.
All right, well, I agree with you on that. That's what I was saying earlier. And I have in my number seven, I have Paul Bearer also today, like you. And again, this is a guy that, you know, got his big fame with, obviously, The Undertaker. So, box office drawing duo was Undertaker and Paul Bearer. I don't think Paul Bearer got enough of the credit, you know, for that big push and success that Taker had all those years. You know what I mean?
Beautifully said. Like I talked about, just got that character rolling. And amazing, too, the fact that Bill Moody, Paul Bearer, was actually in the funeral home business.
Yes, that's right. I forgot to say that.
So talk about that natural transition to your character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Can we talk about number six?
Yeah, all right, go ahead.
Hollywood fashion plate. A classy one himself. I've got Freddie Blassie at number six.
I'm surprised you don't have him higher. I just want to say that because I know your respect towards Blassie, but go ahead, continue.
Well, you know, I do have the respect to Blassie. He was one of those guys that I grew up with in Southern California, and just you talk about larger than life, that was Freddie Blassie. But I think his ability as a wrestler, never one of those guys bell to bell that's going to impress you with his mat technique, but his ability bell to bell to be able to draw heat and draw fans, unparalleled for 20, 30 years in Southern California. As a manager, I always thought that he was great on the microphone, great with the stick, didn't really have that physical involvement, so that's probably why I have him at number six, but mad respect for Freddie
Blassie. Mike, that was a pretty good explanation. I'm actually impressed with that.
Oh, not bad. Well, that's one. Mark that. Now, please, Seth, please mark that on the tape.
No, that would mean Seth would have to write something, and that's a struggle for him.
Yeah.
He's already hit the button, feet are up on the I know. Let's
guys, go. The worst note taker ever.
I'm mad at both of you right now, just to tell you.
And you know what? I don't care.
But you're going to care when I tell you.
What?
I, at number six, also have Paul Bearer, but I cannot believe, especially Tanay, you guys did not mention his former character, Percy Pringle, at all.
Mm.
We can't say everything. This is only a one-hour podcast. Come on.
Okay. Nice backpedal, Tanay.
Well, go ahead. Talk about Pringle. That's a good point. This guy, Mike won't put you over, but I will.
He had a completely different look and a completely different character from Paul Bearer, and he had a lot of success as a Percy Pringle, I believe, in Florida and world class. He was a manager for many years, and to convert himself and to change and morph into this Paul Bearer character was amazing. It was probably the biggest transformation any manager ever made.
Okay, I agree. Okay, look, I'm going to put you over.
You know, all of a sudden, I may be rethinking my texts to you about getting Seth off of these podcasts.
Seth did a good job right there. Ladies and gentlemen, a new host of the Human Podcast Machine, Seth.
Thank you very much.
I digress. All right, so good job, Seth, on that. You schooled Mike Tenay. I was very impressed that you schooled him like that. I knew everything you just said. I was going to say it.
Do your homework.
Thank you, and good night.
Yeah, quit while you're ahead. All right, so we moving on to number eight? Or no?
Number six.
Six?
For you, buddy.
I need a roadmap. Number six, I am going to go with the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. Look, part of being a great manager, you have to get under people's skin as a heel manager, I should say. And Jimmy Hart with the megaphone, Jimmy Hart with the way he talked, his super high energy, high octane, loaded on caffeine, whatever he was doing, it was just, it just resonated through the TV back in the day. He, another guy who created so much heat for anybody he wrestled from years back in Memphis before he got to WWF and all that stuff, and actually one of the greatest guys you're ever going to meet. Today, I know you know Jimmy better than me. I know Jimmy pretty good, but not like you. Maybe you could talk a little bit about Jimmy, but one of the nicest guys you ever met in your entire life, but just a great mouthpiece.
I tell you what, natural transition, because I have Jimmy Hart at number five, so
perfect.
This works out pretty well. Hey, baby. We're talking the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. You talked about the energy this guy has in terms of on camera. He has the exact same energy, exact same persona behind the curtain. And in terms of hitting the trifecta, who else do you know was able to work for independent promotions, TNA, and WWE all at the same time?
Yeah, it's true.
Absolutely. I don't think anyone else in the history of the business has been able to do this. It just shows you the respect that people have behind the scenes for someone like the mouth of the South, Jimmy Hart. I put him at number five.
Yeah, he always had that positive energy backstage, kind of like me, that positive energy.
That matter of fact, has a ball of positive energy. Said it many times.
All right.
You guys look alike, too.
I tried. Who goes? Seth, you go at number five. You guys are really busting my chops. That's all right.
Taz is going to be really pissed now because Taz had Jimmy Hart number six and Professor had him at number five. And now I have Jimmy Hart number five. Three in a row, Jimmy Hart. And I guess I can add one thing that you guys didn't mention, that he's also a very talented musician and songwriter.
Great. And think about all the ring entrance music that Jimmy Hart provided for wrestlers through the years. That's a great point. Boy, Seth is amazing me today.
It's amazing what Google can do.
Google my ass. I know I'm very knowledgeable in the music business. He was part of the Gentries, and they had a big hit back in the day.
Keep on dancing, baby.
Look, that's right. Keep on dancing.
Dude, it's all... Listen, dude, I'm looking you in your eye like a man, okay?
Yep.
That's Google.
No, it's not.
You're a liar.
I'm not a liar.
I'm sorry,
Jesus,
folks. I'm getting hot. All right.
We need a break.
We don't need a break. We're good. All right, so I want to be done with both of you. I want to jump through this window. We're on the 44th floor of Manhattan.
Feel bad for the street.
Nice. All right, where are we? We're up five. I'm up, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
I think I'm gonna pop somebody on here you guys might not have. Tanae might have him. The Grand Wizard.
I tell you what, he's my next pick, but you start first, and then I'll follow up.
Do you have the Grand Wizard on there? Wow. I'm not surprised, actually. I shouldn't be surprised. But, yeah, I have the Grand Wizard on there. I think that... You know, younger fans aren't familiar with him. That's why when I looked at Seth said the Grand Wizard, it was almost like crickets.
Yeah, because I don't know about Superstar Billy Graham, The Sheik. I don't know about those guys.
Wow. Ooh. Oh, man, bro. I got to tell you, Mike, I'm doing a job here with this guy. I love him.
He's good.
He's good. I'm impressed. I'm flattered. I'm proud of the guy. Everything.
Stan the Man Stasiak. Come on. All day.
Dude, he's not looking at paperwork. He's just coming off the top of his head.
Yeah. Come on.
Love it. Love it. And I also have him in number four, Ernie Roth.
Yep.
Whether you call him Abdullah Farouk, which was his managing name for the Sheik, primarily in Los Angeles, Detroit,
Toronto.
Got you there.
Toronto, got you there. Look at Seth. He's like, oh, really?
And then, and then, of course, he was the Grand Wizard for Vince McMahon Sr. for years. He also, I believe, is credited as being the primary inspiration for Paul Heyman.
Yes, I believe you're right.
Paul Heyman followed, you know, that unholy trinity, and now we've hit them all with Ernie Roth, the Grand Wizard, Freddie Blassie, and Lou Albano.
Well, you hit them all. I didn't hit them all, so don't stooge off my list.
Anyway, I have Ernie Roth at number four.
Okay, good job.
Can I just do my Tanae impression?
Sure.
I have the Grand Wizard just outside my top ten.
That's good. That's good.
There's nothing like when... a jabroni gets comfortable with the talent. Right, Mike?
Oh. What did I beef about at the top of the podcast? Right? Exactly.
We created a monster. We created a monster. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, listen to this episode. You are witnessing a monster get created in Seth.
It's like a transformation, a metamorphosis here.
Seth, can you edit that sound effect out of my interview with Joe Blow? Oh, no. You do it, Taz. I'm too busy. Okay. That's what's coming up for my future.
I have my people call your people.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, the Human Podcast Machine will be right back.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
And now back to the Fantasy Draft with Taz.
My number four.
Yeah, go. Thanks.
Yes, I finally get to say somebody before any of you guys say someone. Jim Cornette.
Damn,
is my number.
That's my number four, too. God, you got me.
It's slim pickings with the managers. It's not like wrestlers. We're just hundreds and hundreds and hundreds.
You're right about that. It kind of is slim pickings a little bit. We could talk about Corny a little bit. I mean,
Jim Cornette, I mean, everybody hated him. He was so annoying. He was that kid in school who was just that you wanted to slam up against a locker and slap around. He got under your skin. He had the loaded tennis racket.
Yeah, yeah.
And he managed one of the best tag teams of all time.
Midnights, man. Midnight Express, no doubt about it. I mean, look, Jim Cornette. I always looked at Jim Cornette as, and it depends where you want to go with it, the Southern version of Paul Heyman. So they came up as managers in the same era, and they both had great success. They both were great on the mic. Great personalities, both controversial people outside of the business, too. They have so much in common, and I don't think they were exactly buddies. So, but, the Northeast version, the Yankee version is Paul Heyman, and Jim Cornette is the Southern version. But Cornette, I too have him at number four, was always a big fan of him. His performance, I thought he was great. I mean, you could even argue, I would say that the top four or five guys can even be in number one out of all these guys or number two. Wouldn't you think, Mike?
I think that's really well put, and both in terms of what you talked about, Heyman and Cornette, and that's going to transition to my number three, which is Paul Heyman. I think both Heyman and Cornette started off as wrestling fans who then were able to get into the wrestling business sort of on the periphery with their photographic work, with writing for the magazines and the like, which allowed them sort of to get their foot in the door. And Paul Heyman, while I have him at number three, I think what you were just saying, Paul Heyman could be number one, and I wouldn't argue in the least if you have Paul Heyman at number one, especially when you take into account Paul Heyman over the course of the past year or two with Brock Lesnar and the amount of TV landscape and the amount of TV time that Paul Heyman has been able to provide great promos on Monday Night Raws in the past year or two. Just amazing. Paul Heyman for me at number three.
Okay. All right. So now he knows. See, here's the way this works, Seth. Mike knows that I didn't say Heyman yet. He knows you didn't say Heyman yet. So what he does, he's a spot stealer. He steals the whole spot. He's going to glom it. He's, as they say in, like, lacrosse. I'm a big lacrosse fan. He's a ball hog.
Why do you think I asked for the leadoff spot? it's called well-booked.
And I'm not surprised. And that's the real professor, folks, right there. Yeah, well, go ahead, Seth. Who's your? I hope it's not Paul Heyman because he just took the whole wad. So
no, and God rest his soul. He'd be mad at you if he was here. Is a classy Freddie Blassie of number three.
Nice.
Like, number six. Are you crazy today? What's wrong with you?
You pencil neck geek.
Just for the fact that he came up with pencil neck geek is enough for him to be in top three.
I agree.
No one got more heat from the fans and insulted the fans. Well, we got a couple other guys come up, but no one quite insulted the fans like Freddie Blassie.
He's a legend. Great. Yeah. He's just amazing.
Love the guy. And a little side note, one of the best autobiographies I've ever read.
I have not read it. I'm mad. I want to read. I'm going to read it. You read it, Mike, his autobiography?
Of course.
I'm sure you did.
It's one of those things that as I read that the Freddie Blassie book, I remembered so many of the matches, the incidents, the things that happened in Southern California through the years. So it is a great read. Go right ahead, Taz.
Oh, okay. Thanks, Mike.
And for older, you, buddy. For newer fans, you want to know what life was like as a pro wrestler when people thought it was real? Read his book and see what happened to him. All the people, fans attacking him through the years.
Through acid on him.
Oh, yeah. Many
stabbings. Things through the years like that.
Yeah. It's called heat. Real heat. And I had people try to attack me. I think I was one of the rare generations was mine. Like after some ECW shows, I had people trying to attack me, not just because they didn't like my match, but like and that was the promoter. That was in the parking lot. No.
That's right. Bill Alfonso had your back. It's all right.
A guy that no one's mentioned yet.
I'm guessing we're going to get there with you and Bill Alfonso, though, right? Anyway, what was your pick?
My number. What number are you on?
Three.
Jesus. My number three is Paul Heyman. Also, basically everything Mike Tenay said, ditto, basically. I mean, you know, Tenay said it best about Paul. I mean, it's his staying power, being that he's still not just around, but he's a massive part of WWE programming. I mean, in regards to an on-air character, a massive, massive part. That guy could manage a broomstick and get it over. He managed me, so that's one thing I could say. The three guys here doing this, I was managed by one of these guys. So he managed me during the Eastern Championship Wrestling days, and I learned so much. I learned how to speak on the microphone as a performer from Paul Heyman.
Wow.
That's where I learned, literally learned. I did not want to talk. And he said, no, you need to be... have a full service ability. You can't just be one dimensional. You know, and I did not want to talk, and he forced me to learn and literally put the microphone in my face in some little adult dancing establishment in Pennsylvania where we were doing a show at in front of about five people called Pulsations. That was the name of the place.
I see a future Taz Tales coming right there.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Look, maybe just tease it at this point. I don't give away too much. Yeah.
That's it. Obviously, Mike, they're a big fan of HPM. Being that he books it and he's the lead announcer on it, he should be a fan of it. Paul Heyman, I think it's just because he's still around. He's so over. He's got so much heat. He's just, you know, really. And I got to say, back to Jim Cornette, if Jim Cornette was still, like, let's say, in the WWE and he was a manager, he could still do what he used to do, by the way. I don't want people to think that I'm saying Heyman's got the staying power, but Corny doesn't. I know, Mike, then you know Corny better than me. He could still go.
Oh, no question about that. And in terms of Paul Heyman, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, to be able to do it in this era, and like you said, to still have the heat that he has in this era, it's an amazing tribute to that character and that performer.
All right, Mike. You're at number two.
Yep, number two for me is Jim Cornette. Know that you guys have touched on this, that mama's boy persona, just magnified. And those of us that know Jim Cornette too know that the character that you're seeing is Jim Cornette himself, just ratcheted up.
Yep.
And what have we said through the years? Whether it's Ric Flair, whether it's a Randy Savage, or whatever that character is, the better that you are in terms of using what you really have.
Extension of you. Extension of you.
Yeah, exactly, and I think that's what Jim Cornette is, and is just so amazing in terms of his speaking ability back in the day with the Midnight Express, and Jim Cornette for me is a very strong number two.
Yeah, and I got a funny feeling, boys, that our number one is all the same. So, and I actually, Seth, when we do that, and again, guys, listen to this, guys and gals, you know, look, I know there's a lot of the same names on here, just in different, and it's just it, and it's not a coincidence. We didn't look at each other's notes, and we never do, like I said, when we do these shows. So there's a reason why we're all saying the same names, because there wasn't, like, I think Seth, you said earlier, like the wrestlers, where there's a whole bunch of guys you could name. You know, it's just like
it's a smaller pool.
I'm more interested now to hear our honorable mention list, to be honest with you.
Good. I like that.
Yeah. So who goes? Number two, Seth, you're up.
Yeah. I was going back and forth between number one and number two, and I ended up probably going the same way you guys did, and I went number two, Paul Heyman. I think one of the things we could say that you guys didn't say is he's probably doing his best work now as a manager, advocate.
I don't know. about that.
I think you could maybe. You're talking about just in terms of his on-screen character.
Well, just like the promos he's doing are just the best promos in the company right now.
Yeah.
And
throw the
flag. I want to discuss this.
All right, go ahead.
Don't just move on because you don't see that, Seth.
It's not my show.
It's not your show, and you don't know as much as me. Okay? So that's humble. So, look, man, when Paul Heyman was managing the Dangerous Alliance, and guys like, Steve Austin and Rick Rude and Mike Helpme,
Larry
Zbysko. I mean, some of the greatest talkers ever, right? He's managing these cats. Paul was, man, he had insane heat. Different era. So for you guys to both say, and Mike, I'm lumping you in with Seth because you kind of agreed with Seth. For you guys to say that Heyman's doing his, I think his work he's doing now is amazing. I don't know, man. He's done some great work as Paul E. Dangerously back in the day. I mean, a different era. I don't know if I'd say which was better. I don't think you could just say he's better now. I don't think so.
Maybe because there are no other managers. That's why it seems like it's magnified. You know,
it was what's his name? Dutch Mantel was doing a gimmick there. He's not with WWE, right? Is he doing that anymore? I don't see him.
I haven't seen him.
I know that they had an angle where he was injured backstage. So, you know, as far as Dutch's involvement right now, I'm not exactly sure. But again, while Dutch is Zeb Coulter and you know, through the years has done a great job there, it wasn't really put in that Paul Heyman position.
Yeah.
But that being said, once you're put in that position and the way that you deliver week after week and the extensive promos that he does, I don't know that I would disagree with Seth when Seth says that he may be doing his best work ever. It's amazing to me every week. So, Seth makes a pretty good point.
He doesn't make a good point. My ass. Listen to me. Here's the thing. A couple of things. First of all, Seth, I have a demand. I know no one here at CBS listens to anything I ask for. I make all these demands and no one does nothing, right? So, I want a flag. I want a yellow. I don't care if it's a pocket square. I want it to be yellow because when we do these things, I'm going to throw it up in the air. Throwing the flag. I want Tanae to know that we're throwing the flag.
Okay.
I also want Tanae flown in here via coach. I want him flown in here.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Middle seat. Okay. I want him flown in here. I want him live here. Okay. Because I want to throw both you guys to a window. Here's the thing. With this whole Paul Heyman's doing better stuff now than ever. Look, man. He is getting now, and I love Paul. I love his character. I'm not knocking Paul. Paul, you know, he's getting so much more of a platform, and his segments are longer. He did these great things as Paul E. Dangerously in WCW and all that stuff in a short little segment he had, like a quick little bite. You know what I mean? Like, so I think he's getting more opportunity, and he's also older, more wisdom. He's better. He's had a lot more life experience. You know what I mean?
I think you just made our points.
No, I'm not. But you guys are just
a great job of explaining why Seth and I think he's doing his best work.
Okay, Mike,
you're
rude, Mike, and I think people can see that you're angry and rude. And you're jealous. You're jealous of me, Mike. I know you are. You're very jealous. We know this.
Oh boy.
Truth comes out. No, I'm not making your point. What I'm saying is, I kind of was making your point, but I'm digressing.
I think so.
No, thanks. No, but here's the thing. I'm saying is, like, I don't think it's just, I hate the throwaway of, he's doing so much better work now. It's such a BS line. Really.
I didn't say so much better. I said his best.
I think it's a compliment.
You said it's his best. That's even worse.
No, so
I mean,
much
that was
better
an oxymoron. We got to move on. All right, so who's up? Number two.
That's you.
I'm going with Classy Freddie Blassie. I mean, we've talked about Freddie a lot here, and like I said earlier, I mean, with Mike today, Mike knows. I mean, I know he's at mad respect for Freddie. Mike, bring people inside. Don't you have something on your phone or your? I remember I see it in Tina on your desktop. Yeah, tell people what that is with Blassie's face.
I do on my telephone. I have Freddie Blassie filing his teeth.
Yes,
that pops up on my telephone. So
that's awesome.
That's my little tribute to Freddie.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That is cool. I always know. Whenever I look through your phone, I usually take your phone. I
always catch you going through my bag. What's the deal with that? By the way, he's the only guy in the history of the business that goes to a meeting every week and never brings a pen.
That's me, by the way. That's B-Taz, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I have them, and then I just lose them I'm walking in the meeting.
He's always rifling through my bag to get a pen, supposedly. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge, cough.
Hey, Mike, you must know like a little-known fact that Regis Philbin used to fly Blassie in to chase him around the studio when he was a local anchor in
That all started in Southern California in the early 1960s. And you know I'm going to go off now for 10 minutes, so you know this is going to have to be edited out.
I'll be right back. I'm going to get some soup down the block. Hold on. I'll be right back. I'm going to get some soup.
Go get a coffee, Taz, and then come back, and we'll take it. Seth and I'll handle the heavy lifting here. In the early 1960s, Regis Philbin had a talk show in San Diego, California. And it was a late-night talk show, and his primary guests, believe it or not, were Freddie Blassie, the Destroyer, Ernie Ladd, who was a San Diego Charger turned professional wrestler, football player turned wrestler. So that relationship between Blassie and Regis Philbin went back to the early 60s.
You done?
Wow, I thought that was pretty good.
No, it was good.
Is there any chance we can have professors' tales?
No, there is not.
I didn't think so.
That won't happen, though. Actually, this is the last time you're doing this because I'm so mad at you, Mike. You have no idea.
Oh, perfect.
So, all right, look. So, our number one, we know who our number one is.
How great is this that the number one is going to be shared amongst all three?
Yeah.
And I don't know that any other category that's going to happen.
Well,
but of course it's the
brand. I got to say, man, I am shocked that all three of us obviously are picking Downtown Bruno as our number one.
No, I got Bill Alfonso.
Right. Mike, you had a pop on that. Downtown Bruno. Some people don't know who Downtown Bruno is. I know Seth doesn't. Who is he, Seth? Watch this, Mike.
Harvey Whippleman?
Damn,
I thought you said that.
Yeah, oh, did you say it, Mike?
Harvey Whippleman on my list. It was like an echo in here.
Wait. Did Mike just say Whippleman? You heard him?
No.
I did.
I don't lie.
Come on.
Don't look at me like that.
Check the tape.
Hold on, Mike. Seth runs the tape, so we can't check the tape. Seth, where did Downtown Bruno manage? Where did he make his fame?
Good question.
Don't answer, Mike. See, that shows he's a liar. See, here
I'm not a liar. I just knew, that he was Downtown Bruno.
Dude, the guy managed in one place his whole career. Right, Mike? One place?
One place.
Where?
WWE.
Downtown Bruno.
No, he has Harvey Wimpleman. He's WWE.
Where did Downtown Bruno manage? I'm outing you in front of all your fans.
All my fans. All three of them.
On Twitter, I got people. We love Seth. We love these big baby face now. People hate me on my Twitter. Where? Where, Seth?
Show.
He's turning red, Mike.
I don't know. Memphis?
Good guess, and you're correct.
He got it.
I remember.
Yeah, throwing up stuff at the wall, something will stick.
Look, now he goes, I remember. No, you don't remember, you bullshit artist.
Oh, yeah, came out of Memphis. I pulled it out of my ass. Memphis came out of my ass.
All right, anyway. So, yeah. So,
anyway, how great is it that Bobby Heenan is in the number one slot? And, I was thinking about this story that he told me. At one point, Bobby Heenan was living in Atlanta, Georgia, and he had to fill out some U.S. government paperwork. And under occupation, he had wrestling manager. Now, he went up to the woman at the government office there, and she said, oh, wrestling manager, that's a kind of an interesting occupation that you have. I guess you probably handle bookings for your wrestlers. And he said, no. She said, well, I guess you probably handle your wrestlers' travel. You must handle like that. No. She says, you probably been handled their financial planning as a wrestling manager. And he said, no. She says, well, what qualifications do you have? And he said, it's very simple. I trip, I distract, and I pass knucks.
Oh, God, that's Bobby.
Is that him?
Oh, man.
Trip, distract, and pass knucks.
Oh,
can you imagine the look on this woman's face?
Well, it's this guy is... Bobby Heenan, I don't even know what to say. Look, I'm Seth, you might not know this. Mike Tenay and Bobby are very good friends, you know, and so that's why I think Mike should do more to talking about Bobby. But, you know, I remember the first time I met Bobby was at the WWE, ERF, whatever, Hall of Fame pre-show. And, dude, let me tell you something. This friggin' guy sat at a table before we went live. Everybody was dressed to the nines. Everybody had all catered food there. WWE did it right. Everything was set up backstage. I don't know what town we're in. And it had to be the whole locker room was sitting around a table listening to this guy crack jokes, rip people, tell stories. It wasn't a planned thing. just all of us were just clamoring to hear Bobby talk about anything.
The brand was holding court.
Oh man, and it was everyone, and it was hysterical. It was entertaining. The guy was just simply amazing. I'll never forget it, man. He would just sit around, and the boys. He was just sitting around, and the boys. Everyone was just clamoring to every word he said. It was great.
Well, not only my traveling partner for many years in WCW, but, and Taz, I think you probably can relate to this. When you break into the wrestling business and you break in as an outsider like myself,
yeah,
the ability for you to become one of the group can be a difficult thing.
Yep.
What Bobby Heenan did for me in my life, in my career, made things so simple. Because, and we used this term earlier, because of the rub. If people, like you said, the way that they, the mad respect that they have for a Bobby Heenan, if someone like Bobby Heenan takes Mike Tenay under his wing, then they sit there and they say, there must be a reason behind this. What that does is it amps up my credibility, and I can't tell you on how many occasions that Bobby Heenan would, we'd be sitting in, let's just say, catering, and I can remember we brought in, until Monday Night Show, we brought in a George the Animal Steel, and we brought in a Jimmy Snook, and people like that, and he would say to me, he said, do you know George Steel? And I said, I know of him, obviously, but never met him, and he would say to George the Animal Steel, this is Mike Tenay. He's one of us.
Mm.
That stamp of approval, guys, meant so much to me in my career and opened so many doors for me. So, that's our tribute to the guy, number one.
And I remember when I introduced you to a couple of the ECW guys that came around TNA, I would say, this is Mike Tenay. Avoid him.
Just the exact opposite.
No, that was good stuff. Bobby would have popped. He heard me crack a little joke. I know. Seth, here's the thing. Like all the years, Mike Tenay and I were calling Impact Wrestling together. Most of it was in Orlando, and we had a trailer where Mike demanded like his own locker room, so they got him a trailer with air conditioning and refrigeration. And
I bought my own air conditioning unit, bought my own refrigerator. Well, one of the two of us did.
Yeah, well, somebody did that, and he demanded that the Knockouts dress in the trailer right next to his.
True,
it's just a whole ego thing. But I digress. So what happens is. Mike Tenay, I can't begin yet to tell you, Seth, how many stories I would hear weekly about Bobby Heenan. I don't remember any of them, but they were. I loved them. I loved hearing them. I don't think you, Mike, realize how much you talk about Bobby.
Oh, I know I do. I know it's to the point of being ridiculous, but there's always going to be something. As you know, when you're spending as much time as we do together at the event,
yeah.
Traveling and the like, there's going to be something that comes up that registers in your head, and you can relate a story to it, and it was guaranteed that you were going to get three or four of those Heenan stories a day, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, it was, and I loved it, every minute of it. Well, I mean, let's discuss, well, obviously, number one for all three of us is the great Bobby the Brain Heenan. Let's discuss real quick here, boys, honorable mentions. So, I'll start here. I'll just basically say, why not mess the order up? Unless you want to start, Mike, what do you think?
Well, I can do them real quick here. I've got a couple that I just wanted to throw out there that people may not have even heard of or maybe didn't consider. I'm going to give you one. Wild Red Berry.
Wow.
This goes back to he was a wrestler in the 40s and the 50s, sort of a light heavyweight champion.
Yeah.
But then Wild Red Berry was the manager for Gorilla Monsoon.
Wait, did he manage? Oh, this is, I don't want to get out. Did he manage George Cannon at all?
I don't know whether he managed Cannon or not. I don't believe that he did.
Seth has no idea who we're talking about.
I've heard the name Cannon, yeah.
Anyway, Wild Red Berry, think of this. When Gorilla Monsoon started, he was the madman from Manchuria and did not speak, which is amazing when you fast forward 20 years and he's, the mouthpiece of the company in terms of a play-by-play announcer. But Wild Red Berry was Gorilla Monsoon's manager back in the day. A couple others that I just want to mention real quickly.
Why can't
I
mention
some? Can I have a couple honorable mentions?
But I have honorable mentions, too.
I'll do his first.
Because then it's like I'm copying him.
Mine will be so outrageous that you will not have these.
I bet you I do. Go.
Real quick. Two more, and then I'll get off the soapbox. Gentleman Saul Weingroff.
You're right. I don't have him. I never even heard of him.
See? Gentleman Saul Weingroff, back in the 60s and the 70s, Think of this. This was the one of the greatest heat magnet managers of all time. Managed the German goose-stepping team named the Von Brauners. And can you imagine the travel, the ability to deal with the Southern fans night after night for 20 years? And this is, you know, you talk about an era, and a territory where they believed.
Yeah.
And Gentleman Saul was known for the cane, one of the first guys to use the cane, also one of the first managers to throw fire. Anyway, that's Gentleman Saul Weingraf. And the last one that I want to mention is Bobby Davis. Bobby Davis was the manager for Nature Boy Buddy Rogers.
Yes.
And the tie-in there is, I don't know whether many people would know this, but Bobby Heenan, his real name is Ray Heenan. When Ray Heenan walked into Dick the Bruiser's garage in Indianapolis, in 1960s, I guess, maybe late 1960s. And Dick the Bruiser told Ray Heenan that he was going to become a wrestling manager that night and that he was going to manage the Assassins. Dick the Bruiser said, Ray Heenan. I almost thought I was going to go into my Dick
the Bruiser. I know, because I know the impersonation. That's why I started laughing. You do it all the time.
Ray Heenan doesn't exactly work for me.
Amphitheater!
But the hottest manager in wrestling in that era was Bobby Davis. Bobby Davis was, like I said, Buddy Rogers, you know, world champion.
Of course.
And Dick the Bruiser, in his garage in Indianapolis, said, "You are now Bobby Heenan." And if you think back the years, Bobby the Brain Heenan, how that just rolls off the tongue. And now think of Ray Heenan. I don't know that it has that same oomph, does it?
I don't think it does.
I don't think it does either. Anyway, that's my three honorable mentions I wanted to throw out there. I've got some others, but I'm not going to step on any toes. I just wanted those.
Why really stop now? I mean, really? All of a sudden you're nice? Jesus.
I got to baby face it on the way out.
Oh, my Lord. All right, I got a Humperdinck, man. So I'll have a Humperdinck. I think, you know, Hump could have been on this thing. A super guy. Mike, did you know Hump?
Very, very well.
Yeah,
and he's,
good
he
guy.
He also was on my list. I personally, you know, personal friend of mine for many years.
I didn't know that.
We miss him. Used to spend a lot of time with him, both down in Key West, Florida. He was a resident of Key West late in his life, and used to come to the Cauliflower Alley Club shows after year. Just love Big Daddy Dink, baby.
He was the man. He was definitely just a super guy. Also, Arnold Skoll, and I think Arnold, through his WWF days, managing young Bob Backlund.
And Bruno, right?
I'm just saying, the Backlund thing, I don't know why. For me, it always sticks with him with Backlund. I don't know why. I know, obviously, with Bruno, because I was a Bruno fan. But it just seemed like Backlund needed Skoll more than Bruno needed Skoll.
That's a great point. Great point.
That's so as a wrestler, right, I was looking at it that way. You know, I was looking at how could it help the wrestler, you know? And again, to my point earlier in this episode, that's what it's about most of the times where a manager is incorporated with a wrestler or wrestlers, they need him. You know, which was weird with a guy like Paul Ellering, because Road Warrior Hawk was one of the best talkers ever. I mean, for his style, you know, where Animal wasn't as good. I would want to think Ellering was there just to help Animal more. You know, I don't know. Maybe that was
And think about this. Paul Ellering really did not get involved much of the matches, of course, the way that they were just such a dominant team and just mowed through people.
That's true.
Paul Ellering, almost the exact opposite of someone like a Jim Cornette, who was always going to get involved at some point, you know, to turn the tide for his team.
What do we think about Slick, guys? We didn't mention Slick. I mean, Josh Sobro.
He was the doctor of style.
Of course he was. But, I mean, so what do we think? I mean, he's not on this list. None of us have him on the list. I mean, I don't think he had, like, a longer legacy. I don't think he was looked at as no disrespect to the guy, but I don't think he's respected as a manager. You know what I mean? Like, as maybe because during that carnival-esque era of the WWF, I guess, everybody had animals and pets with them. I don't know.
Right. There were a lot of managers back then.
And I think what I would do in that Slick era, maybe just slightly before him, the person I would add, and I'm stepping on people's toes, I'm sure, at this point, I think I might consider Mr. Fuji, too.
Well, I have Fuji on my honorable mention list. But Fuji never talked. But I mean, he did talk, but when he talked, it was you could understand him, which made it funny.
But think of the classic appearances with Morocco.
On those
Tuesday
night. Dude, that stuff was hilarious, man.
Oh, my goodness.
Guys, folks out there who have never... Go and go on YouTube or on WWE Network, I'm sure, and check out Tuesday Night Titans. What was it, Dr. Fuji? No,
Oh, the stuff on the beach. The stuff on the beach, like the... with Morocco.
Morocco.
Fuji,
Don
Fuji,
Morocco.
Fuji Vice.
Fuji Vice.
Fuji
I can,
Vice,
that's it.
The old Miami Vice thing.
Did you ever see it, Seth?
God, check out Fuji
long time
Vice.
Ago.
Dude, it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
I never missed that.
That
show when it was on.
Seth, do you have any honorable mentions, or are you done?
I had Fuji on there, Grand Wizard, you guys mentioned. Humperdinck I have on here, James Mitchell.
Oh, wow. James Mitchell. Interesting.
Yep. Actually, I know you're going to think I'm joking, but Bill Alfonso used to crack me up. And I was a big ECW fan, and he's, my man Taz, we man, man. The way he talked and everything, he cracked me up, man.
Yeah, Fonzie, listen, man, again, a guy who managed me for a long time, and it was a big part of, and I have him last on my honorable mention because I want to talk about him for a second. Fonzie was a big part of me turning heel. And, you know, his character, and it was Heyman's idea to put him with me, and I loved that he was putting him with me because I knew he had heat, you know, and I needed that. I needed that coming off my neck injury. So... But Fonzie, like, I use him as a crutch because when I was still learning how to cut promos, Fonzie could jump in and blow that friggin' whistle and go crazy and hook the ropes like he's choking out the ropes as I'm wrestling. Let me tell you guys, you two guys, anybody listen to this, I did not know he was doing any of that stuff he was doing ringside because I was so focused on my match. And I honestly, one of the most popular questions I get asked, still... How did that whistle not drive you crazy while you were wrestling?
You never heard it.
I never heard it. I swear to God, I never heard it. I that guy could have been blowing a trombone. I wouldn't have heard it. You know, but I'm just saying, like, I never heard the whistle until I watched it back on TV. But he was great. Fonzie was great.
Really funny. And one more, and you guys might throw a flag on me on this one because he's actually a wrestler. But
I want a flag in here. I'm telling you the truth.
I hear you. I believe you.
Don't let none of these other friggin' podcasters use it.
No,
me.
No. Nobody else can use
it. I want
an flag.
Orange flag. Orange flag.
Orange and black flag.
What do you think, Mike? Orange flag or yellow?
I like orange.
I like orange.
I put Kevin Sullivan down.
Really?
Because he always had, he led these factions, you know, and
like the Varsity Club and the Purple Haze and stuff like that.
He was the mouthpiece.
And then the stuff with King Curtis.
King Curtis,
WCW.
Right.
He was the mouthpiece and he was the leader of these factions. I know he was the wrestler too, but he seemed like
a Gary Hart type, you know, where he was dark and dreary.
Yes.
And Kevin and I are good friends. Mike today and Kevin are good friends. So, I mean, Kevin and I were tag team, I think, champs together and all this. And I love Kev. I learned a lot from him. I don't look at him, though, Seth. I don't get X Mike. I don't look at him as a manager, but I see your point.
Yeah, I think what happens there is your career as a wrestler and as a booker is so strong that it overshadows, I think, sometimes, and you know, I guess probably in WCW, it was the Dungeon of Doom was his, his biggest managing claim to fame. But I think it maybe once you're so strong in those other categories, it overshadows you as a manager.
All right, well, look, that's our Fantasy Draft Edition Top 10 Managers. I think they were pretty solid, boys. A lot of us had the same guys on there. I think it just shows that there really were, just from our viewpoints, organically we did this, and it seems like we all kind of picked the same guys. So that just shows there's really 10 or 11 top-tier managers ever. I would think that's a fair statement.
And I wonder how many of the other categories that we will do will have that kind of consistency. And I probably think that this may be almost, you know, maybe right there at the top in terms of that kind of consistency of having those same names. I like what Seth just said about Father James Mitchell, and I think in that same era that Mitchell, just a really, really great mouthpiece. Scott D'Amore of Team Canada, also really, really good mouthpiece in that era. Didn't have the longevity as the manager, didn't have that, you know, huge national run.
Okay, Mike, and maybe you didn't get the memo. We're in the wrap-up mode, bro.
And Bill Alfonso, too, my last statement on that. Bill Alfonso, really a big fan of the wrestling business and so respectful of the business, too, and just, so I like all those honorable mentions. And now
I agree,
wrap it up.
I
now
got,
you can wrap it up. I the deal. Always got to get in the last word.
Go. Yeah, Seth's got to go. He's already disappointed in you, Mike. For the beginning of the show, he's hot at you already. Right, look, that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I hope you enjoyed this edition of the Fantasy Draft Edition. Top 10 managers. You know what? I think it was fun. It was a good list. list between the three of us. And I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you again for downloading and subscribing. And make sure you go on play.it to check out other great shows here, podcasts throughout the platform. And make sure you check out myself, my stuff, the Human Podcast Machine, dropping shows left and right on you weekly. All right, look, thank you to Seth, the professor of Vegas, Professor Mike the Tape today himself. I am Taz. You are not. Goodbye.